Dr. Rona Novick is author, prolific speaker, and dean of Yeshiva University's Azrieli Graduate School of Education. She recently had a post. She recently had a piece in Times of Israel, which prompted me to be in touch with Dr. Novick. Good morning, Dr. Novick.
Good morning.
How are you? Thanks for joining me. The title of your piece is called Teach Humanity, and especially while I believe that this is a piece that could have come out any time, unfortunately, in Jewish history.
Yes.
The fact that it is coming out now and in light of the continued, the escalation of the matzav going on in Israel, I wanted to discuss the piece with you and specifically starting with the title.
Okay.
So let's talk about teaching humanity. Isn't it a little bit unfathomable that that's something we have to teach our kids?
It is and it isn't. I'm going to date myself here when I talk about a time when report cards had something called citizenship on it. And they didn't mean whether you voted or not. They meant were you a responsible and caring member of your school community, of
Really?
Your classroom. In our move in the field of education towards standards, as we have increased the content area knowledge that we require of our students, whether it's knowing the ABCs or history or AP chemistry, those are very easy areas to measure. And so we have all kinds of state and national government mandates, no child left behind. We want to get our scores up. How do we compare to other nations? But we don't have a way to rate a child's humanity. And if we don't measure it, there's a chance we don't teach it.
Wow.
And the other, you know, question that is logical from your query, why do we have to teach this, is, well, isn't humanity something that comes naturally to all of us?
Right.
And I think you just have to read Lord of the Rings or open a newspaper and realize that even good people can do bad things in the right circumstances. And there also, I believe, unfortunately, will always be not-so-good people.
Don't we then wonder whose standards of humanity we are gauging a student against?
Absolutely, which is why we don't currently have any standards. But my argument is it's not about a standard to hold students up to. It's about a process and a curriculum that says whatever it is I'm teaching, whatever my subject matter or my, you know, my portfolio is as an educator and also as a parent, yes, I have to teach my child to be toilet trained, and I have to teach them how to ride a bike, and I have to teach them how to safely cross the street. Don't I also have to teach them how to feel the pain of others and do something about it?
Wow.
Don't I also have to teach them that certainly when you make a mess, you have to clean it up, but sometimes you can help clean up messes that even you didn't make.
Right, right, right.
And that's what I mean by teaching humanity. And I do think it's an age-old lesson, but it's a lesson that has become easier to forget or get buried in our very fast-paced, very content-driven educational landscape.
So why did we stop teaching it? Why don't we have that section on our report cards anymore?
Well, for one thing, society at large has become a much less formal and routinized culture. So, again, I will date myself. But, you know, there was a time when you called all adults Mr. or Mrs.
Right, sure.
When you always said please or thank you, and children were taught to say please and thank you. And there was a level of formal manners, and, you know, there were Emily Postisms, and there were gurus who told us what was right and what was wrong. I am by no means advocating that we go back to that level of formality. It came at great cost.
Hmm.
But what it did do was give us very clear models and instructions growing up in those generations of what was acceptable and what was not acceptable behavior. In today's world, we are much more being exposed to, and our children are being exposed to, an anything-goes type of manner. They are seeing rudeness not only portrayed but celebrated in the media.
Hmm.
Think about all of the whether it's talk shows, radio shows, print press, that talks about the latest faux pas of a celebrity.
Right, sure.
And it becomes, wow, this person got a lot of airtime. Maybe it's on YouTube. Let me go watch it. So rather than teaching good behavior and good manners, we really are. Our children are swimming in a pool of bad examples.
Right.
So all the more reason that we have to teach them how to be good human beings.
It's interesting how you started your article saying that the juxtaposition of the funeral for our three boys came at the same time as you being named Dean of Azrieli. And the confluence or the perfect storm of emotions that I'm sure hit. How did that funeral and your new position, or I should say, how did that funeral impact on the role that you're taking now?
Well, I always felt both enormously privileged and enormously tremulous at the responsibility of heading up the School of Jewish Education, where I'm charged with, and I, again, have the blessing of preparing teachers and administrators who will change the landscape of Jewish day schools. Mm. How much more so when I have to think about the precious nature of our children as I confront the losses of three.
Right.
And they really are our children. Mm. And I would argue that all children are our children.
Sure.
All children are someone's son or daughter or sister or brother. I have a background in working in grief and in trauma, and I'm a psychologist by training. But being surrounded by educators who are going to be surrounded by children, the loss brought home two really important points. One, the unbelievable potential of every human child that needs to be cultivated and celebrated. And two, the power of the adults in their lives to translate the challenges, even the terrors and traumas of today's life, and make the world it's hard to say in the same breath that we talk about these losses, a safe place for children to learn and grow.
Is that something we can accomplish? Is that a goal? Is that a lofty goal, or that's an attainable goal?
Are you saying, can we make the world safe for children? No, and that's the really hard adult reality.
Right.
I can't promise that a car won't jump a curb, or a terrorist won't strike, or that buildings won't collapse, or floods won't happen, or lightning won't strike. The trouble is, and I alluded to this in the piece, the trouble is that sometimes when we as adults are so shaken by events in the world that we feel tongue-tied, we say, how can I tell my child, go out and play today, all will be fine, when all isn't fine, my heart's broken,
and
somebody is, God forbid, having to bury a child today. How can I tell my child all will be okay when I know the child down the block has cancer, or, you know, this one just lost someone in their family? So we get tongue-tied and we say nothing. We feel if we can't offer a guarantee of safety, then we can't offer anything. But children are quite remarkable in their ability to live with the uncertainty of the world. They're not dealing on the level that we're dealing.
Right.
They're not asking or managing the questions. So sometimes they just need to know, when they say, are you going to be home tonight? They just need to know, are we having fish sticks for dinner? That's
right.
Really the question.
Right.
They're not asking the existential, you know, validation of your existence on the planet. So what happens if we don't give them that reassurance and say, yeah, see you at 6? Because we're afraid. What if something happens? What if the hurricane hits? What if I'm not home by 6? Well, then we leave the child literally afloat, wondering, why didn't mom say? Why didn't dad promise? Why didn't they offer?
Right.
Now, we can be careful in our words. I would certainly not say to a parent, or an educator after these deaths, go into your classroom and say, well, other than that, we're all good now.
Right.
You know, that is absurd.
Right.
It also, you know, points to the fact that we can't say to children that every prayer is answered. Mm. But what we can say is that every prayer has meaning.
Right.
We never know the meaning it has and to whom it has the meaning.
Right.
We can say that our prayer not only changes the world, but it changes us.
Mm.
You know, we can talk about acts of kindness and caring and how each little bit, just the way that water slowly but surely can erode mountains, our kindness little by little makes a difference, even if we can't see it in our moment or our lifetime.
So let's talk about those little things. And I don't think language is little at all. And
no.
I am very careful about the language that I use, not only on the air,
mm-hmm.
obviously, but in my home and when I was a teacher in my classroom. And even what I post on the internet, what I post on Facebook, and I feel so strongly about language that I have found myself in the last number of weeks deleting comments of other people on my Facebook page that promote hate, because
mm-hmm.
that's not the way I speak. And I don't appreciate when people use that language in my domain, in my sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So I make sure that when I'm speaking to my children, I try and keep that kind of level-headed language. And hate is not a word that we use at the Wallachs.
Mm-hmm.
Hate
Good
is,
for you.
Hate is not a word. Nobody hates bananas. It just doesn't happen.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe you could hate broccoli. But, you know, maybe hate could refer to inanimate food items. So, but,
right. But for me, it's like that is a word we do not use.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning, while I had my Tzeva Adom, my Red Alert app, open on my phone as I'm trying to stay as in touch as possible with my family and my loved ones and everyone in Israel, and the siren went off on my phone, signaling that it was something was hitting, a rocket
mm-hmm.
was hitting in Israel, and my kids were in the kitchen having breakfast. And the following ensued. One child said to the other, "What's that?" And they ran to my phone. They saw that a missile had hit, because the alert comes up, a missile had hit in Ashkelon.
Mm-hmm.
And one child said to the other, "A missile hit in Ashkelon." And then the conversation continued, why are they firing at us? And while I was listening and I was not participating in the conversation, because frankly, I am so emotional right now, I wanted to also hear what they had to say. And the only thing I knew was that my son, when he responded to my daughter, like, I didn't get everything because I didn't want to jump in the room so I could hear everything they had to say. But what I did hear didn't include the word hate.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're saying now that kids handle things on a different level as adults, because with adults you're examining all different spheres and whatever. Like I'm happy that they were startled by the sound, but I'm also happy that it didn't hit them the way it hit me. Is that
mm-hmm.
is that a fair assessment?
Of course, and I think it speaks to, you know, children will respond based on the culture that they are exposed to. It is why, although I agree with you and have been equally distressed when I see posts that are filled with angry, venomous threats and thoughts of revenge, because I really don't think that speaks to our Jewish ethos,
right.
Who we are, who we want to be, who we can be, and who we should be. I also don't think it's healthy to teach that to our children.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, all of the research in positive psychology on forgiveness suggests the health benefits, both mentally and physically, that come from a forgiving rather than a vengeful nature. So we do a disservice if we give our children that language, and it sounds like, at least in the Wallach household, you've had some success in creating a different way, a kind of a different context for people to think about even these very difficult things. You know, you mentioned Tzeva Adom. One of my children came to me this week and said, you know, Ima, you have to see this. And he showed me a video, which I had actually seen a very long time ago, that a teacher in Israel had created a Tzeva Adom song, complete with hand motions,
wow.
for children in her Sderot elementary school.
Wow.
So that every single time that and they go off way too frequently in Sderot, the Tzev Adom goes off. They have a song that they sing on their way to the shelter and when they come out of the shelter.
Hmm. Wow.
Empowering them and giving them a context that says, yes, I'm frightened. And by the way, nowhere is the word hate in there. Nowhere is the word, quite frankly, revenge. Mm. It's all about, here's what I'm feeling, here's what I'm going to do to deal with it, and here's how I'm going to get through it. That's teacher's unbelievable example of wisdom in teaching not only humanity, but coping in an inhumane situation.
And that speaks actually to a couple of the points in your piece in Times of Israel about what educators can do to help teach this humanity, to help teach our children compassion and understanding within the context of the classroom, because it is an enormous responsibility. Mm-hmm. But also, these are examples that parents can implement at home, that camp directors can be implementing within camp, because there are certainly people who are saying, well, I'm not a teacher, so this doesn't apply to me and I can do what I want in my home. Or, I mean, kids are not in school now, they're in camp, so this doesn't affect me or us for another couple of months. No, that is not the case.
Right. My three important reminders are value it, live it, and teach it. Mm. If there is something that is important for your children to learn, then you have to value it, and they have to know you value it. How do children learn that it is important in the Wallach house that we don't use the word hate? You must have had a conversation about it. You spent time discussing it. You've banned it. Maybe you even had a fun activity where you buried the word hate in the backyard so nobody can use it any longer. I know a teacher who did that with the word can't, so that nobody in her class for her third grade year can use the word can't.
I wish I had done that. That would have been a great idea.
Have a ceremony. Yeah. But the other way we show that we value is by the airtime we give it. So in our schools and at our Shabbat tables or dinner time or car rides, if all we are talking about is where's the best place to do our nails and whose house has the prettiest decorations, then our children come away thinking that's what's important to us.
Mm.
If we, driving in the car and at our tables and in our classrooms, talk about, we heard someone in the community is not feeling well, what could we do to cheer them up? Then they know that how other people feel matters to us.
Right.
So we have to, and, you know, part of one of the challenges, I think, particularly for parents, is that we do a lot of our caring and compassion quite privately.
Hmm.
You know, we do our Bikur Kolim, and we cook for someone for Shabbos,
right.
And we do it while our children are at school.
Right.
But if we want them to know that it's important to us, we have to say it. We have to give it airtime. Then we have to live it, and we have to live it while they're watching us. You know, we can't be hypocrites. We can't give a lot of airtime to it's so important to make sick people feel better and then never visit the hospital. We can't talk about how important it is to make newcomers to our community feel welcome and then only invite the same four families every week.
True.
We have to be living examples. Teenagers in particular are hypocrisy sniffers. They find it in us. They are the first ones to say, oh, well, that is you. You're the one who told me to do X, but you're doing Y. So we have to be very careful about losing our credibility by saying something is important to us and then not living that value.
Right.
And the last of the three parts, which is, I think, the one that we tend to forget for so much of this kind of humanity and social intelligence area, is we have to directly teach it. We can't assume that our children are just going to pick this up by osmosis. My husband tells this story all the time of how his father, Alev HaShalom, taught him to shake a hand.
Hmm.
And how important it is. You know, you didn't look at that person.
Wow.
You have to look at them. And that's a wishy-washy handshake. No businessman's going to take you seriously. You know, with sincerity. That's an example. We teach our children to ride bikes. We teach them to read in Hebrew and English. We teach them how to daven, hopefully with kavana. We teach them all kinds of skills. But do we teach them social skills? Do we teach them, this is the way that you say thank you to someone. Here's how you accept a compliment, and here's how you accept criticism. Let's practice. We practice riding a bike.
Right.
When do we practice accepting criticism?
Well, I guess that at some point or another, the same way as a parent or as an educator, you see these the fruits of your labor, so to speak, when your kid does not fall down and can go around the entire block on his or her bike without falling down,
mm-hmm.
is the same way when please God, we overhear other conversations in our kitchen and we hear the speak that we hope our kids are using actually being used, that maybe we are moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. And we will. If we look, we will see shining examples of our children's humanity. And when we see them, we have to praise them. We have to catch
right.
them being good and let them know how much this is important to us, how much we value this. We have to, you know, I grew up with a refrigerator door that was filled with everybody's A's and compositions and artwork. But their midot and their menschlichkeit need to make it onto the refrigerator door also.
Right.
Those
Absolutely.
Acts and actions need to be celebrated and valued just as much. Because really, as a parent, nothing makes your heart soar more than hearing what an amazing mensch your child is.
Nothing could be more true. Dr. Novick, I thank you so much. I do wish you complete hatzlacha in your position as dean at Azrieli. They are under great care.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here to serve with such an amazing faculty and such amazing students at an amazing university that truly the tagline of nowhere but here
Amen.
Is so true.
Amen.
And I hope that the next time we talk, we're talking about simchas and about shalom.
Amen. Thank you so much. And that is a perfect note to end. Thank you so much, Dr. Novick. I appreciate your time.
Be well. Thank you.
You're listening to That's Life here on the Nachum Segal Network.